I'm an alcoholic and my name is Brenda. And the reason I say it that way is because I'm an alcoholic first, last, and always, and I never want to forget that. My sobriety date is November 13th, 2004. So my first convention was, I was about a nanosecond sober, and it was pretty overwhelming. I couldn't believe so many people could be sober, and I was thrilled. But I was 57 years old, and so I guess I'm an alcoholic of the slow learner variety. I know that people get here different ways, and I'm often asked this when I volunteer at jails and, you know, at detox. My whole family's an alcoholic. Is that why I'm an alcoholic? And I know some people come to believe they're an alcoholic later in life, and I always give the same answer. Doesn't matter. The reason it doesn't matter is because the solution's the same. It's the fellowship, the spirituality, the service work, the 12 steps, and our higher power. And those things are what gets us sober. My home group is the Big Town group in Etowah, North Carolina. And the reason that I was attracted to this group is because they're dedicated to the traditions, to a singleness of purpose. It's a group that believes in service work and walks the walk, and I wanted to be just like that group. And so I've stuck around there, and in fact, it was about 5 years ago I joined the group, and it just set my AA work and my program and my spirituality on fire. So I hope that you have the same home group. The only problem is that I have to keep reminding myself that we're not the only ones going to heaven. So, you know, I mean, we can get pretty focused on our home group. You know, this is my third AA convention, and when Eva asked me to speak on the topic of older and sober, I was pretty offended, because I never, ever wanted to be either of those things. In fact, I discovered the older part when I got the readout from, you know, now the computer prints out your annual physical and, you know, whatever the doctor puts in. And I'm sure there's an automatic kicker on this one, but it said elderly. The nerve. So, anyway, I do believe that I wasn't a gradual alcoholic. I just didn't get it until later in life. I took my first drink at 15 years old. And a lot of people say, oh, you know, I could dance, I was sociable, I wasn't shy, and all of those things with my first drink. I had the opposite reaction, and it should have been a cue to me. And it was, don't ever tell anyone how much you love this. And my mom gave me drink. She was an alcoholic. And so I said, Mom, can I have another? And she said, wow, you really drank that fast. I said, it was all ice. She said, well, just, you know, don't drink the other one very fast. And, you know, the first drink did it for me. And so did every single drink I ever took in my whole life until the last one. So, you know, I wasn't a person who hated alcohol, thought, wow, I've got to get a handle on this. I just thought I made bad choices. I drank all the time in high school. I discovered boys. And I'm also an alcoholic of the friendly type. So I fell in love a lot for short periods of time. So that's another theme in my story that we won't get into. You know, when I first came into the program, the first time I told my story, you know, I told sort of, you know, what I thought people wanted to hear. The second time I got a little bit of honesty under me, I thought, wow, you know, I've got to tell. So it kind of was like telling a fifth step, which you're not going to hear. Thank God. But I mean, it's, you know, now it's about experience, strength, and hope. I do believe that I have to qualify. In other words, sometimes people say, well, we all know how to drink, so I'm just going to talk about being sober. I think I want to hear the struggles that they went through. Because when I came in at 57, I, You know, I remember sitting at the table the first time, and I was sobbing. And they came to me, and I said, I'm such a jackass. And the person next to me said, no, you're not. You're an alcoholic. Welcome home. And I thought, well, the two aren't mutually exclusive, and I still don't believe that they are. And you can ask my sponsor, because she's here. And so, you know, we went around the table, and anybody my age said, oh, I've got 23 years of sobriety. You know, I've got 30 years. I've got 15 years. And I thought, wow, you know, I'm never going to make it, first of all. And second of all, the difficult thing is going to be that, you know, I have to go without drinking for the rest of my life. But then we came to somebody who said, I have 43 days. And I went, how'd you do it? You know, and I think that's one of the gifts that the people such as I, who are older alcoholics, have to give to somebody older coming in the door. And believe me, as the baby boomer era progresses, we're going to see more of us. You know, and I want to be there for that person because I was certain nobody was like me in AA. Of course, you know, terminal uniqueness is one of our problems. I do have to tell you something that happened at my second international convention. And you're going to love this because it's really us. And what happened is we got to the airport in San Antonio. And you know how all the green shirts are here now. And you can always say, well, a bunch of people were at the airport greeting people. And they were holding up signs, welcome, friends of Bill. And they all had the T-shirt. And a woman walking out with us turned to me and said, who's this Bill? He really has a lot of friends. And I said to her, oh, yes. But anyway, I drank a lot. And I remember my physical going to college. And for my college physical, I drank so much the night before that I had broken all the blood vessels between my eyelashes and my eyebrows. I had red spots. You know, I vomited. Well, you can imagine. It was not pretty. But what I did not know at the time that we know now is you can die of alcohol poisoning. You know, I mean, it's no joke, and it's not ha-ha funny. You know, I just really didn't get it. And I chased alcohol. The reason I went to college was because I didn't want to stay at home. I didn't want to go to work, you know. And so I went to college, you know, and graduated, became a teacher. One time in one of the school districts where I was teaching, I taught special ed, and so we were in this little room. And I drank so much the night before with the teachers that I was in the bathroom vomiting, and my teacher aide said you could hear it through the walls, you know. I mean, who does that, you know? Who does that stuff but us? And see, so yeah, you get it, right? See? So anyway, I progressed like that. I'm in my third marriage now. The first marriage was a nice guy, the sperm donor. And he was, you know, his biggest flaw was that he was nice. He was a good man. The second marriage was a guy that I went out with, and our first date was at the state fair in Minnesota, and he ate 12 what we call pronto pups and 12 beers and threw up. So I married him, you know. I mean, one of our deals is hang around with people who drink more than you do. We used to go to parties, you know, and there'd be a lot of wine, and I'd have a couple before, and then we'd go to the party, and I would listen to you, and I would pretend that I was interested in your life, but all I was hearing was wah, 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 and as long as the wine lasted, I was there, but when it was gone, I was out of there. And then I had to go home and get done, you know, and that's the deal. The party ended when the bottle was empty. I owe a lot to that second husband. He is dead now. He died in 2004, but I left him in 99, never really got divorced. And I owe a lot to him because 25 years of a miserable marriage, I got a PhD because the only place I felt comfortable was the only place I felt good was in school, and I was smart, but I was not wise. And so I got the degree, and in fact, there's a problem with that for me, in that having a doctorate got me more than I should have had in terms of the way the world values it. I do not value, I mean, I'm proud that I did it, but I don't value that about myself today. I value the things that really matter today. And it's not necessarily what the world values. And yes, any of you that are recovering alcoholics know what we mean when we value our spirituality. I was mad at God. I used to yell at God. I used to say, God, when is my turn? And what I found out is that God doesn't bargain. And God doesn't bargain because God doesn't have to. And that, you know, that God was always there for me. I never had trouble believing in God, but I just didn't think that he had much interest in me, and I sure didn't have much interest in him. And today, nothing could be further from the truth. I have to tell you that that when I was a professor, it's a great profession to drink, and I always kind of got myself in situations where you could drink. And I was living alone at the time, and I would come home from school, and if it was 5 o'clock at night or 9 o'clock at night, I would start to drink. And I had a great big mug that I used to keep my wine in, and I would kind of fall asleep sometime with it on the headboard, and it'd be flat in the morning. I'd take my vitamin with it because you have to be healthy. And, you know, I just, when I came into the program, I got a sponsor, and I gave more thought to that sponsor than I did to choosing some of the husbands I married. But she knows all about me, and fortunately, there's not a sanity test for being a sponsor or a sponsee, because neither of us would pass that one. In fact, I just said that at my home group. We were reading something about the sanity, and I said, you know, there isn't a sanity test, or there'd be two people in this room, and I wouldn't be one of them. So, you know, that's the way I view AA. But spirituality has been the gift that keeps on giving. I'll tell you, I know I need to come back. I do my steps. You know, I work with sponsees, and I think that's really important, because every time I work with a sponsee, I have to look at the steps anew. I think it's real important. A lot of my sponsees all my sponsees are younger, but some of them have a lot more sobriety than I do. But I really like the newcomer who's suffering. You know, we suffer from this disease, and I suffered for a lot of years. I had a daughter, and the big thing for me in every relationship, if I knew you, was I wasn't there. I wasn't present in my own life, and I couldn't be present in their lives. I never abused her in any other ways. But when I came to make amends to her, several years after I was sober and I had made amends, I asked her what she thought. Because when I made my amends to her, I was telling her, you know, what I did. And you know, but she said, Mom, you said I was the most important thing in your life and that you loved me. And you lived your life in every way to show me that that was not true. And I said, and she didn't say it in anger or you know, she was talking heart to heart because I was listening. And she said, you never listened to me. And I said, I'm listening now, and I've changed. And she said, yeah, Mom, but I haven't. You know, so I damaged that little girl. She was 40 at the time. She told me this. And so I, you know, I had no trouble being honest with my sponsor about my fourth step, my fifth step. And that's how I feel when I listen to a fifth step. It is a grace that God is giving me. And I really, someone told me that they prayed to forget. And this is when I first started sponsoring years back. And you know what? I don't remember what people say in their fifth step. You know, I pray to forget, and I don't. I can't tell you particulars about people's fifth steps. I believe that AA is my family. Any place you are, family is. And I found this to be true all over the United States. I went to Detroit one time. We were checking out at a restaurant, and I wanted to find a meeting. And this girl who was about 20, I turned my purse upside down, my little coin purse, and my medallion fell out. And she said, oh, friend of Bill's? I said, yeah, we're looking for a meeting. She said, in about 45 minutes, there's one 3 blocks from here. Now, you know what that is. You know, Normies might call that a coincidence, but we don't call that a coincidence. Another thing happened at the airport one time. I forgot to take my liquid yogurt out. And I was going to drink it before I went through security, and I'd forgotten it was in my purse, and the purse went through, and they stopped it, you know, and the agent, you know, looked through my purse and took this out, and what happened was my medallion fell out. It was on a key ring. And she said, "Friend of Bill's?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Oh, good. Go right, go through." But she took my yogurt away anyway. So I every day I come face to face with my defects of character. You know, like I still can't believe that the woman who doesn't pick her garbage can off our front lawn, that God loves her as much as he loves me. You know, so I have to remember that when I get irritated in meetings, you know. The other thing is I like to get credit for what I do. So I was dragging that garbage can back because I figured I should do this, you know, because I did my 10th step in the morning. You know, I was praying in the morning to be of use, so I'm taking it back, but I'm going, rah, 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 and then because I wanted credit at night for doing it, you know. So I decided that maybe, so I called my sponsor, and she said, "You know, I kind of worry about you when you do that, you know." So I still, you know, come face to face all the time. Another thing I do, and oh, God, she's here, so don't tell her, is in the morning I pray to be useful, but then I go to detox at night and I pray nobody will show up, you know? So I still have lots of work to do, you know? So I'll keep coming back, and I hope you keep coming back, because I want to know how you do it. I got to get this thing figured out. But you know what? I'm going to die sober. I swear. But here's the deal with us people that come in a little bit later, is that when I have my 50th, and you got to have 50 to be an old timer this time, I'll be 107. So I don't know whether I should come to the meeting or you should bring me the vodka, you know? But I'm determined to meet God sober, so it'll probably be the latter. Anyway, thank you for being here. Thank you for this beautiful fellowship. Thank you for connecting me with a higher power that has never let me down. I've met my third husband. We are sober together. We pray together. Life has not been great since I got sober. Life has not been easy, but it's been doable. And my husband had stage 3 cancer, esophageal cancer. We went through a lot of stuff. I never once wanted to drink. I don't want to drink when things are great. I don't want to drink when things are bad. I don't want to drink because to drink is to die. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And now I have the honor of introducing Arthur S. from Florida. Florida, you're next.
Oh, I thought you said the last. Okay. Gee whiz, she said she was going to have me last. Somebody watch me that I don't fall off that.
Here, I'll scoot over.
I'm serious. I may as well tell you right now I'm legally blind, all right? So, I mean, I brought up some things here to remind myself about that. And this is a big hazard. It's going to be okay because you're going to come and get me if I start falling. The other thing is I drop my voice a lot of times. I'm from Maine. I lived in Maine for 18 years. I've lived in Florida, thank God, for about 20. Longest I've lived in any place in my life. And before I go any... Well, let me see. I know I have one here from one of my two home groups. For a special reason, I have two home groups. And I know that somebody else is here that I love very dearly. And she and I were supposed to ride up together, but we didn't make it. But she's here. And so I think... one of my home groups is 24... the big book on Saturday morning, and I told him, please pray that I'll be honest. And so I'm going to ask we just get this.
Read it now?
Yeah.
Okay, you slide to your right.
I'll get you.
Okay. Okay, Art had asked me to read July 4th from the Daily Reflections. and it's called A Natural Faith. Deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or another, it is there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. And that's from Alcoholics Anonymous, page 55. I've seen the workings of the unseen God in AA rooms around the country. Miracles of recovery are everywhere in evidence. I now believe that God is in these rooms and in my heart. Today, faith is as natural to me, a former agnostic, as breathing, eating, and sleeping. The 12 steps have helped me to change my life in many ways, but none is more effective than the acquisition of a higher power.
Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah, I read that this morning. I'll be truthful with you. If I seem to be drooping, I had about 2.5 hours sleep, and night before last I had about 5.5, and I usually like to have anywhere from 7 to 10 hours sleep. And so I was hoping I would be last, and then if I drone on, you know, some of you, anyway, that's not even funny. What I wanted to start off with is that. I read it in the wee hours. I was like a father wondering, where is my youngest daughter? My roommates were going to be there in the room with me last night. And when I got back through the maze and all, got up to the room after the beautiful service last night, a guy that's been leading me all around, and really God sent him as an angel to be leading me around for 48 hours or so. And I got in there, and there was no one there, no sign of them. I thought there was a little bag that they'd put in there, so they must be here. And I didn't notice till 1 o'clock that I had a call. And I'm awful on telephones, and I started to make a call, and then I said, no, I think they'll be here soon. So after 1:30, I left a light on over their bed, and I left a light on my side, and I went to sleep after my short prayers. And then every hour on the hour, I have a clock that the VA gave me that says, and I don't know why I can't stop it saying this, it is 1 o'clock. It is 1 o'clock. And then it says, it is 2 o'clock. And I tried at home to get this to stop so it wouldn't be waking up my wonderful friends. But the upshot is that they didn't make it. So when I got up at 4 o'clock or so, I said, oh, good, I've got time to throw out a lot of the notes that I'd made, because I'd probably do better in this way extemporaneously. Oh, I want to take my watch off because I don't want them hitting me over the head here. Everybody that knows me here knows that I'm really windy. And so I will try real hard. But I wanted to say that I've been sober for a third of my life. And that's pretty wonderful. A lot of things I could say about that. I'm not going to qualify because I have a lot of things that are quite serious to me. And I don't have a lot of funny things, but I'm glad you laughed with me a moment ago. It makes me feel younger. But it makes me feel younger. When my child comes out, then people will laugh with me, not at me. And I love that, and I've always loved it. But I used to laugh so that maybe they would feel that I was special. So I don't do that anymore that much. I'm going to let you guess. My doctor said to me Tuesday, Art, how are you going to talk about this to these people? And because he knows everything about me, and I mean everything. And I called him my mentor to his assistant, and he said, Art, I'm not your mentor, you're my brother. Really? He's like that. So he said, how are you going to do this? And I started in all these wonderful, beautiful things that are happening in my life that I like to talk about. And he said, wait a minute, these people are going to want to know how come you stayed sober for 31 years. So I said, oh. And so really what I wanted to try and do is say things from the time that I came into the program to up to now. And the most recent is something I have here is a little something to talk about happened in the room. So I have to stop because I had a big outline that was 5 pages long, and I threw that out. So I came in here being a very sick man. I did not know until the day of after my last drink that I'd passed out 3 nights in a row in my son's house in New Jersey. And my son, I can say it now, God bless his soul and may he rest in peace, but he was the chief of staff to the governor. And my wife and I went down there, and I can't get into all of that, but I drank. And my daughter-in-law, who loved me dearly, but also could talk to me, got me aside, and I thought she's going to say she's going to divorce Greg. I went down there with the idea that I wanted to help my son. I had a father who died an alcoholic. I had 3 brothers that have died as active alcoholics. I'm the only one. I call myself the black sheep of the family. And I'm the only one that went to college in my family and all of that. So she said, Dad, you're a wonderful man. You do great work. I happen to be an ordained minister among other things. And she said, you're a wonderful minister and you're a good father and a good, I don't know whether she was a good husband or not. And you're a good grandfather and all that. But Dad, and I looked at her and I thought she's being honest and pointed to me. So what's she going to say? And she said, but Dad, you passed out 3 nights in a row here. That did it. I just needed that. And I never since that time have wanted to have a drink again. Never. I've had a lot of things happen. Some of them, if I had time, I would mention. Tragedies, terrible tragedies. Not so much to me, although I do have 3 or 4 progressive diseases, and 2 or 3 of them could kill me, like alcoholism. So, that's why I came in here, and I've never wanted to leave, but I've learned slowly. I did the 1-2-3, 1-2-3 for like 13 years. When I got to Florida after that, after my divorce, which was after 46 years, actually 48 years, my wife said at 46, you know, if you go, it'll be a good idea. We had 4 children, 8 grandchildren. She was my high school sweetheart, the only woman I ever slept with or did anything else with like that. And she wanted me to go. And you know what? I went. And when I told this story later, she said, you didn't just go. And I said, no, I didn't go that day. I had to get things straight. I got myself a job. We both retired, but I was working full-time as a minister of a Methodist church by then. And so I had a reputation that was good with people in state government. I worked as a voc rehab counselor. I was, I became a consultant, and I did great, but I was going downhill all the time, and I didn't know why. They didn't know why. The people in the churches that I served while I was working for the state didn't know. I was drinking, preparing sermons on Saturday night, because I was doing 2 jobs. And my wife would stand there and look at me. I don't know why they didn't. I asked them later on, and nobody really guessed it. So anyway, I covered up hard. But, you can see right now, I put a lot of effort into what I do. And I've done things that I wouldn't believe that God would allow me to do while I was drinking. And even after I sobered up, I didn't understand why people kept saying, we want you to do this art, we want you to do that. And of course, I just want my kids to love me, I want my grandchildren to love me, I want all of you to love me. But today, because I love myself, it's okay if you don't love me. It's hard to say it's okay if my children don't ever come and visit, except one who's in the program. So, okay, that's enough about all of that. And let me see. Take just a breath here. I'll just talk about this for a second. I use this to read things like here. And one reason I don't have any notes is because I can't do that. Well, I could, and I, But so I go to meetings with this. I go to the place. I say, oh, that's interesting. The VA is providing wonderful things. I have a great wheelchair over in the other corner that I've been using down here. Brought it on the plane, and I love it. And I picked it out myself so that if I get tired, once in a while, you know, I get tired. After all, you're going to learn how old I am. Oh, did I tell you? My doctor said, don't tell them your age. Let them guess. Okay. Now, I could go through some games with you, but he said, just let them guess. Don't tell them. Or he said, ask them how old do you think they are? He said, there's going to be a few people in that room, doctor. Now, I think there's about 500,000 people in here right now, and I think some of you would make a mistake. Probably you'd say I'm 110. I said, first time he saw me 9 years ago, he set me down on a table. He didn't never seen me before, and he had an assistant who wanted to be a doctor, and he went through all the stuff, all the medical reports and everything. First thing I tell any doctor is I'm a recovering alcoholic. Then I tell him a couple of other things. So he forgets that. He used to forget that. And I say, doctor, don't you remember I'm an alcoholic? So he said, okay, you take everything off now. We've talked about it, and we'll go out, and you come back in. And then I come back in, and I'm sitting on the table like this, and he says, look at that body. And I went like this because I had a terrible body image. And he said, look at that body. And I said, well, I have good genes. And he said, but you have a damn good lifestyle. I don't think he said damn. He's from India. He's a wonderful, wonderful man. Religious, I think. So I said to him once, my mother lived to be 100, 3 weeks short of 100. I had a funeral service or memorial service, and my children participated. And he says, but Arthur, you're going to live to 110. And the next time he came in, he says, you're going to live to 120. Well, I got telling people, I don't even care whether I live to 100 or not, really. I feel that I'm ready as far as I'm concerned, but it looks as though, I'm probably better physically in many ways, emotionally, spiritually, than I've ever been. That's one reason I'm so happy. And I don't have to give you a bunch of baloney about it. But some things that happened, like my son that I loved so much, who said the church had stolen his father from him, was a big man that's obituary was when he died at 58 with the same thing Teddy Kennedy had. I got an email in the morning saying, Greg died this morning, and according to his wishes and mine, you're not invited to his funeral. That was in Falmouth, Maine. He had had his big office and worked for people like, big-time people in his business in Washington and his community. I did not know. And after I went through all the grief of that day, I went to an AA meeting and told people, and they put their arms around me. And then later on, I realized that his three siblings all were carrying that, and they couldn't tell Dad about it. You know, he forbid them to talk anything about me and his family. And so that was horrible. Well, then, so that's one thing that happened. On and on and on, things have happened like that. I had a prostate cancer, and they were treating it, and I got a new Toyota. I said, I'm driving to California. This is the between, because I figured when they said 60, sober, and over, that means in between those two. But everybody's older than somebody, right? So I'm older than some of you. And I'm talking pretty fast because I know I got to stop soon. I'm shaking right now because I'm thinking about the fact of how I went to California and I had a ball. I traveled all the way to San Francisco. I've been there 3 times since then. I've been in Chicago 3 or 4 times. I've been in Washington, D.C. 3 or 4 times. Boston 12 times. Other places like San Diego for the convention. This is my 6th convention. I'm interjecting now, not chronologically. My wife and I went to my first and her only, the 50th anniversary, and I've been to everyone except the one in Seattle since then, myself. Okay, so see, I'm running around and here I get going. One time I was in the pulpit and I stopped. I was doing one of these extemporaneous things and then I had to stop and people looked at me. And I said, where was I? And they laughed and I got back to it. So I go to meetings and I do that, but somehow or other people still love me and people still support me. I've had other terrible things happen, but the prostate cancer wasn't. I mean, I dropped the urologist after 12 years of going to him and the oncologist because everything was fine. That was cancer, and then I now have a kind of leukemia where I'm not taking any medicine. Doctor from India also, like my primary, said, Arthur, if you ever need a medication, I'll put a little pill on your tongue. And he said that to me twice. His father's the same age as mine. And he says, you and my father are just alike. Well, didn't say it exactly that way. So physically, emotionally, spiritually, and relationally, I'm in pretty darn good shape today. I had a couple of other things I wanted to talk about here. I mean, there were other things like the VA finally agreed with my ophthalmologist, who for 6 years has been putting once a month, some of you know about this, a needle in my eyeball. And when I tell people that, invariably they say, ooh, doesn't that hurt? And I say, no, like I told somebody the other day, no, it just crunches. And they'll say, what? And I say, well, he'll say, are you ready, Art? Because I'm one of his favorite customers or patients. Really? Well, I mean, I've been around there. I walked in there and I had blood in both of my eyes. Some of you know about macular degeneration. People say, oh, go get laser treatment. So finally, when I went to California, the reason I found out I was legally blind is I said to him, would you give me a diagnosis? I want to carry my scooter on the plane, my four-wheel scooter. So it said, this man is legally blind. I said, oh, it was a discovery, just like knowing I was an alcoholic was a discovery to me. So, okay, I'm running off the deep end now. Let's see. So I have the leukemia, I have the alcoholism, I have cardiological problem, and they did a thing, and they said, you've got two closed arteries, Art, and this was 18 years ago. They've done all sorts of stress tests. They finally dropped me. Both cardiologists, they said, Art, we can't get a symptom out of you. Really? So let's see now. So that I don't forget, how much more time have I got?
A little over a minute.
Just about a minute. Okay, I picked up the shaver this morning. I said, I better shave. It was 4:30. I was waiting for my children to come home. I'm shaving like that, and I didn't go, bay, 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 bay. And I charged it up at home. So I said, okay, good thing, take it to church. My son says, Dad can make an illustration for a sermon out of anything. I said to myself, this could be my ending today. If I'm not plugged in to God, see, things aren't going to be so good. Right?
Uh-huh, right.
Is that true? Yeah, I've got half a minute.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my. Well, I tell you what, if you want to talk to me for an hour or so afterwards, I'll be down here. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, how old are you?
Oh. I was supposed to tell you. Next. Oh, a week from Monday is my 91st birthday.
Oh, cool.
And I'm going in for 6 weeks into the... Can you hear me?
Good. Step over here.
No.
I will be going on my birthday, the 13th of July. That's why the world 13 is a lucky number for the world, because I was born that day. The VA is taking me because they say I'm catastrophically disabled. Okay? They're taking me into a wonderful center for the blind over in West Palm Beach. I'm from Florida. And for 6 weeks I'm going to be there. They're going to continue doing a whole lot of evaluations along with my ophthalmologist. And then they're going to give me a new computer, and they're going to teach me for 2 weeks about that. So I'm going to be away for 6 weeks. So that's thank you. That was my closing remark.
Thank you. And now I get to introduce Tom Mooney from San Diego, and I've known Tom his whole sobriety.
Hey everybody, I'm Tom, I'm an alcoholic. So my home group is the Casadero Tradition 5 group in La Mesa, California. That's a suburb of San Diego. We meet on Sunday nights at 7:15. It's an open discussion meeting. And my home group, I got sober in that group, and my home, my sobriety date is June 25th, 1996. I came to AA and discovered, not by myself, but with your help, that I had a fear of people. And I needed to be treated because I was drinking to cover up that fear of people. And that's what I discovered was really one of the root causes of my drinking was that and other fears. And what I want to just talk about tonight is that, or today, is that I had a relationship with alcohol. And that relationship has turned into a relationship with AA. And that's part of the story of fear of people, is it was also fear of relationships. And this relationship with AA is just wonderful. But first, older and sober. What happened is that as an AA member, I had this relationship with alcohol, and coming into AA took a long time to internalize AA for me, and it's still happening. And that's the older part, just day by day it happens. And but the other part is that AA, that I've gotten sober, and AA hasn't required me to do anything. It hasn't required me to say anything, do anything, or believe anything. But in order for me to be a sober member of AA, I have to say and do and believe things. And that keeps me in action, and that's the sober part. So that's older and sober. It's done. Our demographic, our AA demographic in 2011 was nearly half the people in our membership are 50 years or older. So we got that going for us. For example, in our home group, a woman came into our home group last year at age 67. And she was drinking like I did at age 20. And she'd been drinking her whole life. And it had just finally caught up with her at age 67. And what I'm really happy to report about that is that she found in our home group, she found in AA everything that I found when I came in. And when I came in, I found everything that maybe some of you found long before I ever got here. And that was help. There was help for her, and there was help for me. But that particular alcoholic can be really hard to reach. The senior, the older alcoholic can be really hard to reach. We're a little bit insulated from bars I called the San Diego County Agency on aging and independence. And they said that over two-thirds of their calls are either alcohol or drug-related. And they make a lot of calls. And that's a big number. So those alcoholics are hard to reach. And in San Diego, we've had some success with reaching those guys, those men and women by, going to places like assisted living homes and providing the medical staff at those living homes with AA information and, meeting lists, AA books and literature. And there's been a little bit of success with that. And I'm proud to be a member of AA and maybe many of you probably do the same thing, that we're actually out there. And if we can't work with a wet drunk, we're willing to go out and inform the professional world about our program so that they in turn can reach out and help other alcoholics. And I'm proud that happened in our home group, and I'm proud to say that it happens in San Diego. And also in San Diego, we have this. I brought some of these. We have in next year, in 2016, we're going to have the 10th Annual Seniors in Sobriety Conference. If you haven't heard of that conference, it's November. The average temperature in San Diego in November is 70 degrees. if you're interested, I have some registrations up here after the meeting. I can talk to you about it. It's aimed at 12-step work. It's aimed at and it's focused on alcoholism and aging. So for me, I'm one of the lucky ones. I came into AA, and I'm one of those people that are described in the fourth edition of the Big Book that I stopped in time. There's a whole collection of stories in that fourth edition about guys like me, that the bottom came up to meet me. And, I didn't have to go to the depths that many people had to go to. Being one of those people, I still had the symptoms of chronic alcoholism. I had mental issues related to alcoholism. I had emotional issues related to alcoholism. I had employment issues, marital issues. I drank, and I put other people in danger because of my drinking by operating machinery or cars. I drank in the morning. I hid bottles. My life was centered around alcohol, and so. That's part of how I qualify, that if maybe you drank like that, and maybe you didn't go to prison, maybe you didn't get any DUIs, but maybe you still are a chronic alcoholic. And I'm so lucky to have found myself in our AA literature. I'm so lucky that we thought far enough ahead when we did the fourth edition to include those stories. But really, I found myself in the literature before then, because Bill wrote in the first edition about, his friend Fred, I think, that went to Washington on page 43 and relapsed in Washington. And he wrote in there that he only felt the first nip of the ringer, and that he wrote that most alcoholics have to be much more badly mangled before they'll come into AA. But, we found since that was first written that the bottom can be raised, and many of us got here in time, and I'm one of those people. But I did have a few issues. So I drank daily, every day. I'm lucky. Well, one of my home group members pointed out that I'm a good alcoholic because I chose a career path that would allow me to drink every day. And I'm self-employed. I can drink whenever I want to. And I did. It was morning. It was on in the morning, on all day. And I never went to bed without some sort of substance in my bloodstream ever for years. And I would wake up in the middle of the night and, covered with sweat. 2 o'clock in the morning, that was my time. And my head would be pounding, my heart would be racing, and I'd lay there in the dark and stare at the ceiling. And that would go on for 3 hours, and then right before the alarm was going to go off, I'd doze back, fall asleep again, and get up in the morning and deny that ever happened. And that went on and on and on. And denial was a big was a big issue for me. I lied to you and I lied to myself. So as my drinking progressed, I realized that I had a relationship with alcohol. It was like a partner. I defended alcohol. I trusted alcohol. I had a physical relationship with alcohol. I thought me and alcohol had a future together. But then what happened was I started to fight with alcohol. But I'd go crawling back to alcohol. And then eventually, when alcohol was gone, I grieved that alcohol was gone out of my life. I was one of those guys that entered into a control period in my life in my 30s where I tried to control my drinking. And then I went, not being able to control it, I tried to exert willpower. And so I went into a period of white-knuckle abstinence from alcohol. And, you know, this was total arrogance on my part. I didn't ask for anybody's help, but I knew I had a problem. Can you hand me my water? But I knew I had a problem. So I thought, you know, like the good alcoholic, I thought, I'm going to handle this myself. And I didn't know about AA. I didn't want to learn about AA. And of course, what happened was I had, when the pressure mounted, I had no defense against that first drink. And I started drinking again. And it wasn't one of those nice experiences at a wedding where, you know, maybe you pick up a glass of champagne and, oh, I just had a drink for the first time in years. No, this happened in the parking lot of a dive bar at 9:30 in the morning with a fifth of rum and a big gulp Diet Coke. And it was on. You know, it was a planned thing, and So it got back on again, and not long after that, I found there was a note on the I came home one day and the family was moving and I hadn't been invited to move with them. And then the note came because I talked my way back into the house and talked everybody down. And, you know, this is not a problem. Come on, you guys. And it did enough talking to where everything smoothed out for a little while. And then sometime after that, I got a note. And it was one of those notes. And I'm going to clean it up. I'm going to clean the note up for you. Basically, essentially, it said, we need to talk in a lot of different words. And it wasn't a note that ended with X's and O's at the end of it. And, you know, I'd been lying and I had been hiding for so long. I didn't know who I was at that point. But that note cut through that denial. It was that note that was enough to at least set the wheels in motion for me to end up here. And I got directed here. I got directed to AA and came in, like I said, in 1996. And slowly that relationship began to change. As I said before, it takes a little time for me to internalize all this stuff. And I began to get this relationship with AA where I defended in AA, and I wanted to get back to AA when I wasn't around AA. It was like a partner, you know. I wanted to get back in there, and then I eventually decided that me and AA have a future together. And so then getting sober, you know, I was lucky enough to fall in with some people that were very helpful to me. I got in with one of those groups of people that... I walked into a men's meeting and I have no idea what they were talking about that day that I walked in, but I know that after the meeting, I went up to somebody I didn't know who had gotten a cake at the meeting, and I said, you know, I'm new, and I heard you talking to this other guy, and it seems like this guy's got something going on here. What are you doing? And, you know, and thank God in AA for the people who are willing to put their arms around your shoulders instead of kick you in the ass. Because if somebody had kicked me in the ass at that moment, I probably would have walked out the door. because at that point it was too raw, it was too sensitive. I hadn't gone down so far that that kick in the ass would have helped me. I was at a point where the arm around the shoulders was what helped me. And these guys took me out, and they said, "Come on over here," and then they said, "It's gonna be okay. Just stick with us." And they didn't become my sponsors, but what they did was they became mentors, and they took me out and they took me to dinner. And it was the first time I'd gone to dinner with men in AA, with men at all, not to mention AA. I hadn't been, my life had turned so miserable at that point. You know, this is kind of jumping ahead, but I thought maybe, you know, alcohol had so fundamentally changed my thinking that I was unable to experience joy, but I just had to get sober, and then I could experience joy again. But anyway, these guys took me out, and they showed me how to, over time, we went out on every Friday night, and they showed me how to 12-step, and they brought other new guys along with them, and pretty soon it got so fun that, you know, my face would hurt when I was coming home at night, because I'd been laughing so much, And you know, my wife got a little angry because this was a smoking meeting that I went to, and I'd come home and I'd smell like smoke, and she's all, "What's up? You know, where you been?" And I said, "Really? We were out at the meeting." And she's and so, you know, I ended up throwing my clothes in a pile in the corner, because she didn't want to smell the cigar smoke. These were a bunch of old time guys, and we were meeting in a kindergarten room, and so all the tables were down low, and the chairs were down low, and everybody sat down like this, and there was a pall of smoke over the room like this. So when I stood up, I could see the smoke, but I couldn't see them. And there were a few guys that had cowboy hats, and their cowboy hats stuck up through the smoke. And that was exactly what I needed. You know, I read that big book, but I didn't understand it. But I understood it when we went out and sat around and laughed and joked and scratched and spit and did the things that we do. And slowly but surely, I was able to internalize this thing a little bit, and it was because of you. And as I said when I first started, that I have this fear of people. You know, I have this. I'm awkward socially. I have this thing that prevents me from wanting to be able to establish a relationship with you. And you all have shown me the way of how to do it. And when you relieve me of that pressure, all of the desire to drink just went away. And, you know, I read that big book, but I read that big book. I read all of our literature. I'm a good little AA citizen, you know, but I don't remember it when I close it. But when I go to meetings and I hear you all tell me your experience, it's like a filter for me. For some reason, I can't get it out of the book what I get from you all. So I get to sit in those meetings, and I get to listen, and it has just fundamentally changed my life, completely new life. So I'm struggling with something right now. Mom is sick. She's about at the end, and I've been spending a lot of time with her. I kind of walked into I'll jump forward real quick here. I walked into a medical emergency one day that I was totally unprepared for. And because you all have passed so much on to me, I was able to walk into a situation, and I'm no damn good in those situations. I'm useless. But by practicing the principles and saying, "Look, I don't know what to do, but I'd really like to help. Is there something that you can show me how to do?" The people there showed me what to do. And within a couple of days, I was in there, right there, helping her. And this was paying back this debt that I owe to my mom. And I was able to do it because of what I learned here, because of what you guys gave me. And she's leveled out a little bit lately, and we had a lot of time to talk as I've been taking care of her. And I told her about this, and I told her about relationships, and she gave me a lot of stuff, but I couldn't bring all that baggage with me. You don't want to know that. But she said, she told me, give about relationships, the things that she always thought about was give more than you take. And we talked about that. And I said, in AA, Mom, you know, we do that. We give more than we take. And she said, well, also, don't hold anything back. And I said, Mom, we do that in AA, too. We don't hold anything back. And I learned that in my home group early on. Somebody said, hey, Tom, how you doing? And I was about a year sober. And I said, you know, I'm just not getting anything out of meetings anymore. And her eyes narrowed like this. And she says, well, then you haven't learned anything in the last year, have you? And I said, well, what do you mean? She goes, don't you know that when you come to meetings, you come to give and contribute? You don't come to take. If you have to take, you can take. But from now on, when you come to the meeting, I want you to be ready to contribute. And she wasn't talking about money. She was talking about just being there, being an AA, adding to the meeting. So now every time I go to that meeting, I have to be ready to contribute. But she also said, my mom also said, don't be afraid of the future. And the big thing for me when I heard that was it reminded me that Ward Ewing, who is our past General Service Board chairman, was responding to a question about what does AA need to do to grow again, to be vital again? And he just said, we don't need to do anything new. If we collectively, as a fellowship, and individually as AA members, practice the 12 step to the best of our ability, everything will be fine. And I just love that. Thank you very much.